This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
Lawrence Livermore and IBM team up again.
And Cray pre-sells another Cascade supercomputer.
Good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for June 29th, 2012, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Chris Willard of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you doing, Michael?
Good. I'm glad you're back on the show. Been gone a while, but got some interesting news this week. So, yeah, let's get to the first one. The big news this week, I thought, was that announcement by Lawrence Livermore and IBM. They're going to team up and deliver a new supercomputer that's going to be hosted at Lawrence Livermore, a 5 petaflop system, so not a small system by any stretch of the imagination. It's actually going in this summer, and it is summer, so it's going in very soon. And this one's going to be used to as part of sort of a private public partnership to help industries use that capability, to use that petascale capability for commercial uses, for commercial businesses.
Yeah, that this sort of public-private arrangement has been in the market for some time. It dates back to universities in the 70s and 80s, setting up partnerships to sell time to industry on pretty much a if you've got the money, we've got the cycles basis.
Right.
That really depended upon the industry knowing what to do with the computer. That as time went by, it sort of evolved into a joint research projects, being a partnership with both organizations. And of course, the issue there became one of intellectual property and publishing rights, with the, of course, the industry wanting to maintain what intellectual property they could, and the university wanting to publish in academic journals. And it still required both groups to be pretty smart about what they were doing. This stage, from what's been announced, seems to be the third stage where the university or the national lab becomes more involved in bringing industry up to speed and getting more organizations within the country sort of HPC capable, if you like.
Right. That does seem to be the emphasis here. And I think it's the emphasis of other similar programs we've seen at some of the other national labs. I know NCSA talks about this, Oak Ridge, of course, the Ohio Supercomputing Center with their blue collar program. Blue-collar supercomputing. It seems like there's more of this sort of just partnership where the national lab is sharing some of their expertise on how to use these systems, how to run and develop codes for these larger, you know, especially these petascale systems, which are typically is not the expertise of businesses, of even large businesses. It does seem like there's more of a partnership these days than when they were just sort of letting businesses have access to just raw cycles and say, have at it.
Yeah, it sort of gets back to the definition of supercomputing versus supercomputer. Out the most expensive but easiest part is getting the hardware in place. And the more difficult part is developing the models, the expertise, integrating the computational workflow into the workflow of the engineering development cycles, and generally developing the internal culture to use HPC in an effective way.
Right, exactly. Lawrence Livermore hasn't really spelled out who these partners will be. I mean, they're, you know, it's part of the DOE and NSA program, so ostensibly they'll be supporting those missions of energy and security, which they sort of fold in now to anything that has to do with security, including economic security, which opens up everything basically to you know, any business, manufacturer or otherwise, that can make use of HPC is in our economic security. So I think they'll be pretty liberal in how these businesses are teamed up. But yeah, the idea here is to bring these U.S. businesses up to speed. And with the petascale system, it presents some unique opportunities. It's going to be supposedly the 5 petaflop system, known as Vulcan, actually. But from what I've understood from Lawrence Livermore, it's essentially going to be used as a capacity system with a few forays into the petascale application realm as opportunities present themselves. It's hard even for the academic researchers to scale up to that level. So yeah, I'm sure it'll be a challenge to get like a product simulation into a petascale realm as well. But I'm sure if that opportunity is there, they'll take advantage of it. The other interesting thing about this is it's not just Lawrence Livermore sharing their expertise. It's also IBM. I mean, this is actually going to be a BlueGene Q system like some of the others we've seen. And obviously, there's some expertise that's associated with that architecture. And IBM's going to be there to share some of their experience as well.
Yeah, and that provides a new opportunity for IBM, and particularly given that it's a BlueGene system, the ability to promote a highly proprietary product into the market space. So that, you know, the more people who know how to use a BlueGene, the more people who will use BlueGenes.
Right. Or just have good experience with IBM. I mean, this is seems like it's just a good opportunity for them to get their supercomputing message out there. But right, I mean, if some of these businesses like what they're doing, it's not like they're going to themselves buy a 5 petaflop BlueGene, but they could buy a rack maybe, especially yeah. some of the larger businesses certainly could probably afford a rack or two of BlueGene Q. And if not that, maybe another system that's similar from IBM. But yeah, this is a good opportunity for IBM to kind of learn about what these businesses need and sort of how to meet those needs that are sort of distinct from what, you know, the research and the national labs look for in a supercomputer. I mean, the only thing that sort of I wonder about when I hear about these public-private partnerships is sort of the fact that, you know, we've got all this taxpayer money sort of going into this. I mean, obviously this 5 petaflop system wasn't for free. Lawrence Livermore bought it as part of a $200 million sort of contract that brought in Sequoia, the number one system, as well as Dawn, the BlueGene P system, I believe, that was a precursor to Sequoia. So as part of this big contract with IBM and this the new machine Vulcan, it's going to be part of that. And there's, you know, obviously the taxpayers are funding Lawrence Livermore. It's a DOE center, and now they're partnering up with a select group of businesses to sort of push that technology into the commercial realm. But, you know, they're sort of picking and choosing who that's going to be and how that's going to get out there. And, you know, I know in other realms outside of HPC, it's sort of been a little bit controversial when the government starts sort of picking winners and losers and helping some companies at not necessarily at the expense of others, but in preference to others. And I think that makes people uncomfortable, and it brings questions into my mind on how these companies are being chosen and which ones are being chosen. At this point, they haven't announced who those partners are going to be, but I guess we'll find out at some point. So, but this sort of brings to mind, I know before the show we were talking about what other countries do in this regard as far as, you know, matching up their government-funded HPC to commercial entities. And it's a little different in other countries as it's been in the U.S., at least until recently.
To play the devil's advocate here, I think that in a realpolitik sort of way, that there is a lot of various levels of state capitalism found in the world. You know, we see this in China to a lesser extent in the Five Tigers and Japan, that competitiveness in industry leads to or can lead to economic growth, more jobs, all of those things, and is to a certain extent becoming analogous to military security or military competitiveness, where we're dealing with other nations' economic policies and political policies. In this case, instead of on a military hardware scale, on a computing capability scale. Certainly, I agree with you, Michael, that it does run the risk of a few people making poor decisions and then that being translated throughout the program. And certainly, it's rife with opportunities to lobby politicians and send money in directions that may be more politically than technically advantageous.
Yeah, the other aspect to this is, even though these are basically aimed at U.S.-based companies, anymore, a lot, or maybe most U.S.-based companies, manufacturers or otherwise, they're multinationals. And they have offices in other countries. They have, you know, relationships. They, if not selling to other countries, they employ people in other countries. So certainly that's true for at least the big IT companies that we cover, and I'm sure for some of the businesses that would use this technology as well. So if we help a company like that, and then they create jobs in, say, you know, Japan or China or India or elsewhere, I just think if sort of this information was publicized, I mean, we're covering this as part of our HPC community, but if this sort of got out there as common knowledge, I think there'd be a little bit of a controversy about it. But, you know, I agree. I think this is basically a good thing to get the technology out there. Obviously, U.S. competitiveness is important for the economic well-being of this country and for the citizens that live here that want jobs and you know, to increase our role in that. But, I think it gets sticky pretty quickly. But like I said, this has been going on for a while. There's a lot of these national labs that have these programs, and it's very interesting work because it does bring in sort of unique applications to these labs, and sometimes they actually get to share some of that expertise back into the research community. So that's a good cross-pollination there. But
you just brought to mind the other side of the argument is that if we put a lot of money into national labs and universities to do wonderful research, and that somehow that research never gets out, that is even a greater waste of money than getting it out to too many people.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I mean, the conventional way of getting it out there is people leave the university and go out and do it on their own. But yeah, this sort of takes out the middleman. You can stay in research forever and still sort of be in industry. But yeah, it's just a different model. But it's interesting how it's sort of developed over the past decade or two. And yeah, your point's well taken about what other countries are doing. They're much more involved. Even in Europe, apparently, these public-private partnerships are a little bit tighter and more well-developed than they've been in the U.S. Typically. So yeah, we're part of a global ecosystem here, and we're trying to compete on a global scale. So it's just sort of interesting how this has sort of changed over the past few decades from what it used to be.
Yeah, studying high-performance computing architectures turns out to be a whole lot easier than studying high-performance computing policy.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about yet another petascale supercomputer.
Mellanox's end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect products, consisting of ConnectX-3 adapter products, the comprehensive SwitchX family of fixed and modular switches, software, and cables, deliver industry-leading performance, scalability, efficiency, and economics for the best return on investment for performance interconnects. Mellanox provides its worldwide customers with the broadest, most advanced, and highest-performing end-to-end interconnect solutions for the world's most compute-demanding applications. For more information on Mellanox's end-to-end connectivity solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering, visit www.mellanox.com.
So the second story about a petaflop supercomputer this week was Cray sort of pre-announced they're going to sell a Cascade system, their next-generation supercomputer, to NERSC. Now, NERSC has Hopper right now, which is an XE6 Cray. So their next system will be a Cascade system, the Intel-based architecture that Cray's been working on, and it's due out in 2013. And sure enough, this NERSC system, which is for now called NERSC 7, will go into production sometime during next year. it's a 2 petaflop system, at least initially. They haven't really gone into how this thing would evolve, but that $40 million is supposed to go over multiple years. So probably some of that is support, certainly, for that system, but they might actually, who knows, maybe they'll be expanding it. Maybe that takes that into account. I don't have that information. But yeah, it's a large system, 2 petaflops to begin with, at least, and looks like it'll be Intel-based, and then taking off some of the workload for Hopper. I mean, there's a lot of codes and users at NERSC. I think there's like 4,500 users at NERSC, and they're always looking to get more cycles and more flops. So this will be a nice system for that. The interesting thing to me is this is the first Cascade system, at least that I know of, that's been announced for a U.S.-based site. They've got 2 others they announced previously, one at HLRS in Germany, University of Stuttgart, and one at Kyoto University in Japan. And remember, this gets back to what we were talking about before the break. This Cascade was supported by DARPA research to some extent. I mean, Cray obviously put a lot of their money into it as well, but this is part of the HPCS program that went into Cray and then IBM, and DARPA supported that. And here we are, and Cray is now selling these into other countries, you know, in this case, Germany and Japan, at least. And that was DARPA money. That was U.S. taxpayer money. Cray's benefiting from that, obviously, and NERSC obviously will too. But again, it's another example of sort of this investment that sort of gets diffused out to the global sphere there with
the global sphere. Government. The you know, the other way to look at it is that now Germany and Japan are investing in Cray as well, so that it does not become simply a U.S. investment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we get the money gets back. And even the research that goes on at HLRS in Kyoto, I mean, some of that is international research. Some of those researchers are actually U.S. research. So it all comes back. It's sort of hard to, like, draw the lines now.
Yeah,
the world is global, and, you know, it's...
It's global, and it's sort of the irony of a trade-based economy, where you have to keep your trading partners strong in order for them to keep you strong. The other interesting thing I noticed in the announcement is that NERSC got in a little bit of the California state sport of weather gloating.
Yes, I noticed that as well.
Where they noted that because of the wonderful weather at Berkeley, they'll get free cooling.
Right, right.
From the Cray... I guess just a regular air cooling system.
Right, they'll use the water cooling towers to do some of the heat exchange, but no chilled, you know, explicit chilled water that's going into the system because of the temperate climate up there in Berkeley. And it is; it's quite the nice climate. Maybe it's a little bit of a shot at maybe Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and maybe Austin, Texas. The guys attack there; they have to resort to a little more. What should we say, more air condition intensive techniques to keep their supercomputers cool. But yeah, supposedly we'll get good efficiency up there at in Berkeley because of the nice cool weather, at least in the summer and certainly in the winter as well. But
you know, the other interesting part about the cooling is that they report a statistic of keeping the power of cooling to less than 10% of the power used for computing. And that just begins to highlight the shift over the last several years towards the importance of cost of actually powering these systems and cooling these systems, as opposed to just looking at flops no matter what the price.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a 2 petaflop system to start with, obviously. So it's going to be quite expensive to power it. But yeah, any money you can save on cooling is definitely going to help. And I think we both heard about the Super MOOC system in Germany that was just installed. That's a 3 petaflop system, and they're using that advanced direct hot water cooling technique to make that super efficient. And that's a very temperate climate, yet they're getting the ultimate efficiency. They're going to try and use some of that waste heat to actually heat the facility itself. So yeah, this is becoming a big deal when you get into the petascale systems, because we're talking about, you know, upwards of $1 million a year per petaflop. So anything you can squeeze out of that is going to be very interesting. So I think that's all we'll say about the NERSC 7 system. I think we'll follow up on that a little bit next week. But Yeah, it looks like these petascale systems are just becoming more common as we go by. We noted there were 20 on the top 500 list, and it looks like we're heading towards 30 or 40 by the time we get to the next one. So, yeah, we're definitely in the petascale age, and a lot of interesting stuff going on. Chris, thanks for coming on the show this week. I think we're going to have Addison back next week to take a little break, and we'll pick it up from then.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, so long.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.